Thank you for joining me today. I'm Ali Harding and you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM. Now, I'm joined in the studio today by Carla Rains, who's the founder of an organisation called Bridget in St Kilda, and by Ella, who's an 18-year-old who's living in some of the accommodation that Bridget has organised, I suppose. Hi, ladies. How are you?
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning to both of you. If you both can just come a little bit closer to your mics. Thank you for trekking out to Bentley East here, though you're pretty close, Carla. You live in the area.
Yeah, I'm in Bentley, so it was super close for me.
Ah, lovely. Great. How long have you lived in this area?
I moved to Bentley about 8 years ago from St Kilda, actually, and then done the whole dog, family, kids thing out here in suburban Bentley.
Okay. And Ella, you currently live in St Kilda.
Yes.
Yep. Now, let's go back a step. Carla, you sound English.
I am English.
Where are you from in the UK?
I'm from a tiny little town called Lewes, which is quite close to Brighton on the south coast.
Okay. And how long have you been in Australia?
So I've been here about 13 years now. I came over here originally with my twin sister Jenna as a backpacker. Uh-huh. And then we just completely fell in love with the lifestyle, the weather, the people, but also saw that there's a homelessness crisis here, much like there was in the UK. So there's endless work for somebody like me that is focusing their career and working in homelessness.
Okay, so when you arrived in Melbourne and decided that this was an area you were interested in exploring, the homelessness sector, did you have a background in that already from England?
Yes, so I've been working in homelessness for 20 years since I was 18. The crisis around homelessness in the UK is really extreme, and I'd been working in like refuges for women and crisis accommodation and all kinds of different places, and I thought it was really bad in the UK, but then I came over here and it felt a lot worse. Oh. Because at least in the UK we could always get someone a bed somewhere. Whereas I came here and I was experiencing having to say to people, just go and sit in McDonald's tonight, or, you know, ride around on the trains because it might be safer for you if you're a young woman. And just thinking, this is so bad. And I ended up living on Grey Street, and that was,
it's Grey Street, St Kilda.
It's an interesting place. You don't want to stand still too long on the street on Grey Street because, it's just a strange place. Anyway, and then I applied for 4 jobs. And I got offered all 4 of them, and I just couldn't believe it. It just felt like there's just not enough people that want to work in this sector in Melbourne. So there's so much work, but that's a huge challenge for the homelessness sector right now, is that we just can't recruit or retain staff because it's just so tough out there.
Mm. Were you surprised that Melbourne's homelessness problem was so big?
I was very surprised, because I think, when you grow up in the UK, we just spend our whole time watching, Home and Away and Neighbours. Yeah. And you think that it all just looks rosy and epic. And then you come over here and you realise that it's got an underbelly like everywhere does. And I think it continues to astonish me that countries that are, as rich as the UK and Australia still have a situation where we have children and young people that don't have a bed to sleep in at night. Mm.
Tell me about your not-for-profit Bridget and how that's Bridge It, not the girl's name, Bridget.
That's right.
Tell me how that started and what you do.
Yeah. So after working in homelessness for a really long time, I became really burnt out and disillusioned with the sector, and just felt like I just couldn't actually do it anymore because it wasn't having the impact, and people are just circling around just constantly in and out of homelessness services. So it just felt like, what's the point in actually doing this work? And then I remember sitting on Carlisle Street in Balaclava with an incredible mentor of mine, Jane Chewson, and I was 8 weeks pregnant and my daughter was 18 months old at home. And Jane said to me, you need to set up your own charity, because if you don't, you're never going to have the kind of impact that you want to have. So that was kind of the start of this wild ride, which is creating and setting up Bridget, which happened 4 years ago. So we've been going for 4 years. We dreamed really big about what would kind of excellence look like what are all the best things about all of the programs that are out there, and there is so many organizations working so hard doing such good work, but we pulled together different components of all of the different residential programs that we'd seen to work. And we dreamed about this idea that we call the Cocoon, which is a safe and beautiful home for 16 young people in St Kilda in a beautiful converted mansion. And our young people come to us from the ages of 16 to 21. We provide a full range of different supports. So, of course, the fully self-contained home is critical, but also life and living skills development, lived experience, peer mentoring, wellness mentoring. And then we just have a lot of fun together because they're, you know, teenagers, and it's critical that they learn that the world can be safe and that the world can be fun, and that we basically step in and believe in them and care about them and support them on whatever it is that their big goals are, which can be uni or getting their driving licenses and getting safe boyfriends, all those types of things.
Have you actually built a residence do you call people your residents, your clients, your
residents,
friends?
Residents and or young people, yeah. So it was the building itself is a beautiful old mansion that is owned by a community housing provider called Housing First, and they just believed in us enough to say that they would partner with us. So it's a 20-year arrangement that we've got with them, that they basically provide the house and the tenancy management, and we provide all of the supports. And then in really exciting news, we've just secured our next building. So that was a pretty astonishing situation. We met through Jane Chewson, who I mentioned earlier. We met this incredible local couple who said that they wanted to do something meaningful with their wealth. And they've bought us a building, which is by Luna Park in St Kilda, which is 15 studio apartments that we're just about to start renovating, which is a $1 million renovation that we're hoping to do for free through the generosity of incredible builders and local community.
How amazing. That's fantastic. I'm going to quickly go to some of our sponsorship announcements, and then we'll come back and we'll have a chat to you, Ella, about what it's like living in the Cocoon One and your story as well. I'm joined in the studio with Carla and Ella from Bridget and Cocoon, a homelessness not-for-profit in St Kilda. And Ella, thank you for coming in. Now, you're only 18, Ella.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and how you've become involved and why you're living at Cocoon?
Of course. So I come from the mob Greta Grung in Bundaberg, Queensland, and I'm also Māori as well, coming from Wananui in the North Islands. And I started my journey around 14 years old, kind of just not knowing I was homeless and house hopping because I just didn't want to go home. I was escaping family and domestic violence, and at times not even realising that I was in those situations.
Were you living in Melbourne then?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. In which region of Melbourne?
North. So
in the northern suburbs?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So northern suburbs are a bit of away from St Kilda.
Very different.
How did you find yourself down in, this area in the south of Melbourne when you were only a young teenager?
I found myself getting into a domestic violence situation. I called police and I was misidentified and considered the perpetrator. And I was actually taken away into a cell and given a warning and an interview, which was terrifying, of my dreams of wanting to do community service work and especially work around domestic violence.
And you were only 14, 15?
I was
then,
just,
Ella. Yeah.
Just 17, thinking that my whole life is over. How can I be in this sector when I'm looked as as a perpetrator by our system.
Where were you living in this? I mean, were you literally sleeping on the streets?
No, at that point in time, I was actually with one of my parents and I was terrified. I had to restrain my parent that was on top of me and I had to defend myself and kick them off. And that ended up in them hitting the window and the wall. And I was terrified. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I did not want to be there at all. So I thought, my only option is to call the police. And I thought that they would help. And they were reassuring me over the phone that they're going to help me and everything's going to be okay, just to get taken away in cuffs. And then once that had sorted itself out, they tried to get me to return back home, where I said, absolutely not. And they searched for every service. They called Child Protection. They wouldn't help or put any assistance in. And a lot of the services were closed on a Monday night at 1 a.m. And so I found myself getting in contact with St. Kilda Crisis Services, Salvation Army. And they had put me up in accommodation in Southlands, in that area.
I realise now I probably should have done a bit of a warning at the start of this chat about people who may need crisis support. And at the end of the show, at the end of the interview, I'll give out some numbers for people to call if they are feeling at risk at the moment. And I'm sure you'll be able to provide me with some numbers, Carla. Ella, thanks for sharing that. How did you end up finding Carla and the Bridget group?
I was in a refuge for 10 weeks, which is overstaying my stay, which was only meant to be 6 weeks. And there wasn't any housing options for me that were suitable for a 17-year-old little girl. And then one of the coordinators had gone to a Bridget Summit and had heard about their program and thought that I would be such a good fit and bargained their way to get me in the house.
Okay. Carla, can you explain how it worked for Ella and how it works for other young women once you find out about them, once somebody, another agency puts them in touch with you or you find out about them?
Well, unfortunately, there's thousands of young people in the same situation as Ella, and there's not nearly enough organisations that can support. Most organisations won't accept young people under 18 as well, so it means that there's even less options for children, essentially under 18s, like Ella was. So what we do to manage the demand, which is so high, is that we have incredible relationships with partner organisations like Fusion, where Ella came from. When we have an apartment that comes up, which, as you can imagine, isn't very often because we only have 16 and the young people stay with us for 12 to 18 months, we tell our partner organisations that we've got a vacancy, and then they refer the young person who they think essentially has the highest needs at that time. And then my twin sister Jenna, who works at Bridget, will meet the young person and we'll obviously ask some questions, get to know them, see if we think it's going to be a good fit. And then we try and move as quickly as we can because we know the situation's urgent, and then we try and get them into our house as quickly as we humanly possibly can.
You just said into an apartment. Now, a lot of people would have the picture of, you know, old-style boarding houses,
yes,
especially in St Kilda and other parts of inner Melbourne that were pretty awful places. Can you explain what Cocoon is like?
Yes. I mean, it's hard to put it into words, but if it was to give a sense of it, it's so beautiful. It's been featured in design magazines. It's this incredibly stunning mansion where we've done loads of really cool graffiti and artwork all over the walls. We have like a huge focus on the sensory element. So Everything's kind of soft and it smells amazing. And we have beautiful furniture and we have plants and we have throws. And it's just the most special, beautiful home. And the reason that that was important to us is that we believe the young people deserve that. And we know that people can mirror their environments. So if you put somebody somewhere that is totally disgusting, where the doors don't lock and the toilets are overflowing, you know, people punch holes in walls. Like that's just the way it is. It's just human psychology. But the opposite is also true. When we put these incredible young people into beautiful spaces, they start to heal and thrive. So we believe that's a critical component of the cocoon model. And as we grow, which our big intention and dream over the next few years is to have 4 to 5 cocoons operational in Victoria by 2030, they'll all be equally stunning.
Mm. What do you think of the space, Ella, that you're living in now?
Our little joke around the house is we call it luxurious homelessness because there's nothing quite like it out there. When Carla describes the house, it's not doing it justice because it is just so gorgeous that you can't help but have such pride in the home. And when you bring people over, you get that pride, like, yes, welcome into my beautiful home. Like, this is my beautiful home, which many of us don't have or haven't had before.
Do you, so it's like a lovely big share house, it sounds like. Do you all have your own bedrooms?
Yes, so we all have our own bedrooms, kitchen and bathrooms.
Oh, you have your own kitchens?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Do you also share spaces as well? Is there shared living areas where...
We have 3 shared common areas.
Okay. Oh, how lovely. Yes. So you can just go off and be on your own when you feel like that, but there's also space for friendships and
exactly. And all of this is really critical because not all of our young people feel safe to share spaces. And most, like you mentioned with boarding houses, most solutions put people together and they have to share, you know, share a bathroom or share a kitchen. But if you've experienced really significant childhood trauma, you might not feel comfortable in the middle of the night to go to the toilet, you know, so actually just giving people their own space is really critical. But also having that common space is equally important because we need to teach young people the skills to be able to live together. A lot of our young people build amazing, beautiful friendships and they'll go off and live together in share houses. So developing that skill set is critical, you know, and all of the normal things that you expect to happen in share houses happen. Like I'll go down there and I'll try and make myself a cup of tea and there's no milk because the milk's been like taken. It's just the way it is. And then we have to like navigate those conversations and, you know, that's just the real world. A lot of real world stuff happens in the cocoon, doesn't it? And the residents develop skills that they go off and take into their lives so that they can thrive in their future homes.
Is there a time frame that people stay at the cocoon?
So it's a 12 to 18 month stay. Our average stay is actually just under 12 months. For a lot of our young people, that's actually enough time to stabilise, to get work, to get into education and then to move into their future homes. But we've never exited a young person yet just because of some kind of arbitrary date.
Because they took the milk.
Yeah, oh, no, we've never done that because somebody's taken the milk. But, you know, we take the philosophy. One of the things that I think is really unique and amazing about the cocoon is that we take the approach that what would we do if they were our children? So we don't give up on them. We don't turf them out for random reasons. We let them have pets. And Ella's got a beautiful, very well looked after white cat. You know, they have pets, they have partners, you know, and it's all like I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old at the moment. But I think about who am I going to be as a mother to teenagers? And we want to give them that same kind of respect, trust and space to be able to experience what being a teenager looks like and take on responsibility and have fun and make mistakes and do all the things that we all do as teenagers in a really safe and loving and supportive environment.
Mm. So you have a cat. What's your cat's name, Ella?
Her name is Big Mama.
What does that mean?
She's a bit on the chunkier side, so I call her Big Mama because she's just the Big Mama of the house.
I have 2 cats, and one of them is actually currently on a low-cal diet because he's
so yeah, is mine.
Yeah, he's a bit greedy. So yeah, you do have to watch them. Leads to all sorts of problems, doesn't it? If the cats are overweight and too lazy, have you thought about what you'd like to do when you leave?
Yes,
cocoon, Ella.
I have been lucky enough to find a friendship within the cocoon that I've really see flourish and grow with one of my beautiful neighbours, and we're planning on going into the private rental market at the end of our stay, which is April next year.
Okay, terrific. And what do you think you will be doing? Are you studying? Do you want to work, find employment? Maybe you're already working?
I work 4 different jobs, okay, but I'm looking to get a 5th one that's on the horizons, and I'm looking to go back into my studies next year as well.
What are you studying?
I was studying my Diploma of Community Service.
Okay.
So,
and when, I should have asked you, how far did you get in school when you had all of these other issues, terrible issues going on in your personal life?
When I was in high school, even in primary school, I just had so many gap years because of everything going on at home. And so when I reached year 10, I was in the flexible centre, still really struggling, and I had dropped out and gone to TAFE. And then I also struggled there, which wasn't a surprise in mainstream schooling. And then I stopped. I started working for a while, and then I jumped back into my Cert 3 of Community Service, which I finished at the Cocoon, actually.
Oh, congratulations. How hard has it been for you to find work when you have had, you know, a tricky background? Has that been a problem for you?
It has been a little bit of a problem with, you know, who wants to hire a freshly 16-year-old with no work experience? But I guess I always had the mindset and mentality of I need money to survive, and there's no other way for me to survive without looking after myself, being independent and working hard.
I'm going to play a song that you asked me for. This is Lauryn Hill. Does this song have any particular meaning for you? Or?
Yes. My mother actually used to always play it, and it always gave me a sense of women empowerment and feeling strong enough within yourself to believe yourself and your gut and your intuition.
Okay, so this is Doo Wop, and we'll be back for more of a chat soon.
Yo, remember back on the bully when cats used to harmonize, like, yo, yo. My men and my women, don't forget about the dean. This is not the most the king, yo. It's about a thing, yeah.
Feel
yo,
real good, wave your hands in the air
and lick 2 shots in the atmosphere.
Looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins? Yeah. You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gonna pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, then you probably can. Talking out your neck saying you're a Christian, a Muslim, sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gonna tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you're thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum. Nigga, you still defending them now. Lauryn is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head. Million women in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because of sin. Look at where you be in. Hair weaves like Europeans. Fake nails done by Koreans. Come again.
Versus
related to the men. More concerned with his rims and his Timbs and his women. Him and his men come in the club like hooligans. Don't care who they offend, Papa Yang.
Like you got yang.
Let's not pretend. The one that packed pissed out by the waistman, crissed out by the casement. Still the name of his basement. The pretty face man claiming that they did a bid, man. Need to take care of their 3 and 4 kids. Been the face in court case when the child support's late. Money taking, heartbreaking. Now you wonder why women hate men. The sneaky silent man. The punk domestic violence man. The quick to shoot the semen. Stop acting like boys and be men. How you gon' win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? Come again.
And you're listening to Ali Harding on South of the River. Thank you so much for joining me. We're talking, I'm talking with Carla Rains and with Ella, who Carla runs the Bridget and Cocoon programs, which looks after young women who have found themselves in difficult situations and given some wonderful accommodation that is largely the result of very generous donors. Carla, can you tell me a bit how you fund this work that you do?
Yes, absolutely. So when we first launched 4 years ago, we had $20,000. So not very much at all with the size of the ambition that we had around running supportive housing. But we've since galvanised $10 million of support over the last 4 years, which is astonishing to me and to everyone else too. But I think the people that support us, they want to put their money in places where they know it's going to have extremely high impact. And I think giving money to a smaller organisation where they can kind of like touch and feel it almost, that they can see it, they see the impact, I think that's just very compelling. You know, and everyone, I believe, thinks that teenage girls and gender diverse people deserve a safe and beautiful home. So I think it's easy to kind of galvanise support around that. We're also really heavily supported by businesses. So our major backers include Mecca, Virgin, Decuba, Spotlight. The list kind of goes on. But we get absolutely $0, like absolutely nothing from government to do what we do. And, you know, we've obviously got a terrible situation with the Victorian government debt. So they're not funding innovation or new homelessness services. So they're not talking to us at all about that. So it's something that we're, you know, desperately trying to work on because the need is so high. We need cocoons all over this state. And we can't do that without government support. But until that time that we get that government support, we're going to keep rallying the community and our amazing partners so that we can make the cocoon happen.
Mm. And what about local councils? Are they supportive?
So the City of Port Phillip Council gave us like a very small grant when we first started. And they've committed a couple of years to us, again, relatively small money in terms of what we need to operate, which to give you a sense of that, it costs us about $50,000 per young person per year to provide the support that we do. So we really want to collaborate more deeply with our local councils, but they're also constrained by how much money they've got and so many kind of competing demands for their small budgets.
Mm. Apart from success stories like Ali here, can you tell me about some of your other, I don't want to use the word graduates, but, you know, other people who have lived with you for a year or two and what they've been able to go on.
Yes.
And do.
Yeah. So we call our young people when they leave us our butterflies, and we still see them as part of our community, and they're still welcome to come back, and we still stay connected to them if they want that. Yeah, we've seen incredible things. Like, so many of our young people have moved into private rentals, into community housing, and they're still stably housed now. We've seen young people get full-time work. So one of our incredible young people came back recently and was telling us all about how she's in full-time work now. She's loving her house. Like, young people just getting into safe and healthy relationships. So one of our very first residents messaged me the other day and said, I'm a mummy now, and my kind of heart sunk because Ella knows how I feel no cocoon babies is one of our mantras. but then she sent me a photo of this little dog that she had got and was saying that, you know, living with a partner now in a rental and is feeling happy. So that's just so lovely for us to hear those stories, you know, that they go off and they go to uni and they just, like, a small amount of help at this critical time in their life is the thing that changes the trajectory for forever. And that's what we see all the time at the Cocoon.
Why do you say no cocoon babies?
Because I think that our young people are so capable of achieving whatever it is that they want in their lives. And, you know, an unplanned pregnancy when you're 16 or 18 can completely change your life. And there's no judgment on anyone that finds themselves in that position. And of course, we would provide support if that were to happen. But I just think, dream really big about what your life looks like. You know, what do you want to be?
Like, when you're so young, you're still early 20s.
One of my all-time favourite Ella quotes that I love to tell people about is that Ella said when she first came to the Cocoon, she thought that maybe one day she'd get a job at Hungry Jack's, and now she thinks she's going to be the future Prime Minister of Australia. And I believe her. Like, I just think, dream big about what your life looks like and have fun. Like, some of our young people, they've gone off to Thailand, and, you know, Ella got a passport during the time that she was with us, and she's just come back from her first overseas trip. You know, I know from being a mum, as great as it is and as much as I love it, I'm so glad I've been to 30 countries. I've lived in flat shares. I had the experience of travelling the world with my now beautiful husband, Corey. Like, tying yourself down with a baby at this age and attaching yourself to a partner that you've got when you're a teenager is going to probably be tough. Mm. But of course, if a young person desperately aspired to be a mama, we'd have that conversation. Yeah.
Can I ask whether the young people pay rent, you know, to get into learning those skills of budgeting?
Absolutely. And we think that's totally critical. Like, one of the other things that I love to go on about all the time is the real world. So we don't want to set our young people up to fail. So, it, you know, if you put them into accommodation and that they actually don't learn that critical skill set around budgeting and paying rent, and what happens if you get into arrears? How do you actually manage that? Mm. And, like, most people, me included, we learn by doing, not by sitting around and somebody having a conversation with you about what budgeting looks like. It's like you have to learn to budget in real time. And that's probably one of the big skill sets that we support the young people to develop, particularly young people who have been in out of home care. It's when a young person's been really institutionalized, like they've been raised by paid workers, they haven't paid rent, they haven't had to wake themselves up, they haven't had to cook themselves dinner. You know, and I know that from working in residential care, that often you're not really teaching the young people much in the way of skills. You're just trying to keep them alive day to day. That they need to come out of those environments, and you actually need to teach them all of those skills so that they can go off and be able to thrive in life, and that they don't kind of put themselves at risk of not paying their rent, ending up on the street, doing crime, in jail, in psych wards, circling around these really negative, really expensive interventions, but actually kind of learn the skill sets like we want for all teenagers, and then go off into the world with the ability to manage it.
Yeah, yeah. Ella, if you weren't at Cocoon now, where do you think you might be?
I think that I would be circling around the homeless sector. It was such a struggle to be in a refuge and have the uncertainty of which service is going to accept you next and where am I going to go. And I watched two of my close friends that I made in the refuge circle back and come back after their stays and after they were kicked out and their stay was over. And then I left to come to the Cocoon to watch my friends still circling at that same refuge that I stayed at and coming in and out, sending me videos like, look, this was our old room that we shared, and they're there for like the fourth time. Mm. And I have no doubt in my mind that that would be me, because there's not any stable long-term housing options in the homeless sector.
Mm. On a lighter subject for a moment, what do you like about living in St Kilda, apart from your lovely
beautiful mansion
beautiful mansion that you're living in? What do you like about the area and sort of the south of Melbourne?
I really love just how aesthetically pleasing it is. I came from the northern suburbs, so everything was not as beautiful as St Kilda, and I think the community there is very great. I walk down the street in my Hello Kitty pajama pants and people are like, oh, I love your pants, hey. And it's like, it's just wonderful human interactions when you leave the house.
Yeah. And you've lived in that area as well.
Yeah. I mean, I loved St Kilda. It was a really kind of fun place to be when I was young and wanted to enjoy like that young life. Mm. But now I just love Bentley because I think it probably suits, you know, I'm just about to turn 40. It probably suits the lifestyle that I'm in now. And during COVID, I realised I actually don't really know my neighbours, but I'm completely obsessed with the concept of community. So why am I not building it for myself? So I door dropped a note into all of my neighbours' doors, said, I'm creating a WhatsApp group if you want to join. Got most of my neighbours to join, and we've been looking after each other's kids, making each other food, swapping stuff that we don't want, like trampolines, and just actually being able to walk out of your front house and be able to shout, you know, hey, Ned. It's like, I just kind of love that. And I feel like, you know, there is just an incredible community feel, but sometimes you do have to take steps to bring that out.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're taking lots of steps in St Kilda. How can people help if they would like to?
Well, I mean, I guess the really big thing is if you're looking to donate to a charity for Christmas, consider donating to Bridget. So you can find out more about us at www.bridgeit.org.au. And also just tell people about the amazing work that we do. Like, if you've taken something from this or you've learned something new about the youth homelessness crisis in Victoria, tell someone about it.
Mm. And if somebody out there is having their own issue with homelessness or they know somebody who is, I think you said earlier that there's the St Kilda Crisis Contact Centre that people can always reach out to.
That's right.
And that number is 9536 7777. And I'll put this up as a podcast later today on Southern FM's website, and I'll include some numbers there for people to call if they need any help. We're saying goodbye now, but I'm playing a song you requested, Carla, which is You're My Best Friend by Queen. What's special about this for you?
It's a song that I grew up listening to. It's also the song that I walk down the aisle to. And it's special to me even more so because it's the friendships at the Cocoon that I see that makes it such a truly special place. So I just thought it was very fitting for today's conversation.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, ladies. It's been so nice to chat with you. Good luck, Ella. I hope you're Prime Minister one day.
Thank you very, very much.
And, yeah, have a great weekend.
Thank you for having us.
Enjoy yours.